Matthew Shepard was murdered earlier this month by two men in Laramie, Wyoming, who allegedly targeted him because he was a homosexual. 20 years ago, documentary filmmaker Arthur Dong was attacked by four teenagers in San Francisco because they thought he was gay. In an effort to understand what motivates anti-gay violence, Arthur Dong interviewed convicted killers of gay men about what drove them to murder. His 1997 documentary, Licensed to Kill, features these prison interviews, along with videotaped confessions. Jeffrey Swinford is one of the men who appears in Dong's film. Let's listen to a scene in which Swinford describes his crime.
I'm not going to let anybody get out on any of my friends.
Did you know what was going on?
No, not at first. Bobby, he kind of jumped to his feet. He said, "Mother, I'm tired of you hitting up on me like that right there." And I thought, "Man, what the?" And he hit this one dude, and I said, "Man, what's up?" He said, "Man, these are mother fags like that right there." And we got to fighting and stuff, and dude backed up in this corner with a knife, you know. And he said, "I'm HIV positive," like that right there, you know. And we're like, "Well, what the, you know, what are you doing? Trying to, you know, spread AIDS or what, mother, you know, it just pisses us off more. It happens so fast, you know, stuff happens so fast in a situation like that. You know, it probably really didn't, I really probably, you know, shouldn't have done it. But if a man ever hits his hands on me again, that's just where I'm going to have to take it." This guy, you know, he was trying to make a homosexual advancement at my best friend. He's dead because of it. And this stuff, you know, it's just, you know, life's just one big opinion, what you make of the opinion to me. And I don't have any opinion whatsoever for homosexuals, except they ought to all be taken care of.
Jeffrey Swinford is just one type of gay basher portrayed in Arthur Dong's film. I asked Dong if he noticed anything familiar about the two men accused of murdering Matthew Shepard from reading about them in the news.
There are certain patterns that I saw in my research for the film, for my film, that I saw repeated in what was being reported. For example, the whole notion of wanting to rob Matthew as the motive, and then being angry because he supposedly flirted with them, and the outcome being the attack, the beating of Matthew. That is so common in terms of the motives given by perpetrators of these kind of crimes.
What were your first thoughts when you heard about the murder of Matthew Shepard in Wyoming?
I was numbed. I've been researching this topic for 20 years, culminating with the making of the documentary. And during that whole process, I think in order to do my job as a filmmaker, and you know, I put quotes around that word job, I had to put up an emotional barrier, because if I didn't do that, I would have been hysterical making a film like this, because it was so personal and painful at the same time. And during the making of the film and during the promotion of the film last year when it was out commercially and also on PBS, I had this barrier and subconsciously. But when Matthew's death hit the news, when his beating hit the news, not even his death, it just stunned me. I said, "Wait a minute. You know, I've been dealing with this issue, and I thought I did something to contribute to the dialogue and debate, and here it is smacking me in the face." And it broke those barriers just completely.
When you talk about hate crimes, the implication is that hatred really, it lies at the heart of what motivates violence against a group. But were all these men truly motivated by hatred of gays? I'm thinking of Corey Burley, who said, among other things, that he was a tough guy. He was robbing people. It was just a going thing, that let's go rob a homosexual. You get it in your head that mm-hmm. they're weak. You just do it to do it.
I think you have a point there. It may not be just this pure hate or hatred of homosexuals. I think a lot of it has to do with themselves. With Corey Burley, there were two factors I think that are important to point out. Is that first, he as a young child was beat up a lot and pushed around a lot. He was, you know, kind of weak, and he was teased a lot. And he says, "Well, enough of this. I'm going to be a bad guy." So he found out that, well, he can be really bad by beating people up. And everybody started to be afraid of him. So this was his process, his evolution in terms of his bringing up. That was one thing, just to prove that he was a man. And another thing was that he was very affected by the media. He didn't really know gay people, at least as far as he knew, but he had heard that they were weak and you can just do things to them and they wouldn't fight back. And that was the thing. They were easy prey. Here, what that points out is that the media has is a factor in the perception of what gay people are to those who are not familiar with that community. And Corey Burley bought into that.
It really surprised me that watching your movie, I was struck by how pathetic the men are, that some had been or claimed to have been raped as children, that they were very confused about masculinity, about their sexuality. What did they tell you about the psychology of abuse, how it turns men towards violence?
Well, you know, the whole issue of child abuse and molestation comes up a couple of times in License to Kill. And in one case with Donald Aldridge, he claims that he was abused as a child, sexually abused. But in the same breath, he also says that his friend's daughter was raped by a gang of homosexuals. So you kind of, you know, take that with a grain of salt there, that statement. However, we have a person in the film, William Cross, who claims to have been abused as a child, and that in his crime, he was motivated by this sense of rage when he was touched by another man, and particularly an older man. And this physical touching enraged him so much that he just totally lost control and stabbed the victim 7 times. And he believed that it wasn't so much a fear of danger, of physical danger, of being attacked by this older man. He was a 55-year-old man, and William Cross, I think, was in his mid-20s at the time of his crime. But it was more of a fear of losing his masculinity, of being raped once again. And he made that distinction very clear. I think in the making of this film, after the gathering the interviews, in the editing process, I knew that child molestation and the issue of child molestation within the gay debate, let's say, was very touchy. And I sought out advice on this. I said, how do I deal with this? What kind of message are we sending out? And in speaking to many experts and psychologists on this topic, they're saying, well, you know, actually, when you look at the statistics, and of course we should understand the statistics are what they are, and we can always mold into what we want them to reflect. But many convicted murderers in prison have a history of child abuse, and that's not unusual. So why would it be any more unusual for a killer of a gay man to have that history as well?
These guys are really quite casual talking about their crimes and their ideas about homosexuals. Did they know that you are gay?
Well, it was sort of a don't ask, don't tell situation. They never asked, and I never told, really. And, you know, I think one can say, well, gosh, is that a cop-out? You should have, you know, said something. First off, I think from the very beginning of my communication with each one of these men, I was very forthright in what the project was all about, in that it was a film about gay murders, taking it from the point of view of the perpetrators. I also believe that taking it from a journalist's point of view, I thought if I did tell them that I was gay, it would provoke them one of two ways. One, they may give me answers to please me, let's say, and not be not speak negatively about homosexuality. Or they would try to provoke me and just start spewing out all these hateful statements. And I didn't want either of those things to happen. I wanted as much as possible for them to really speak what they felt, to speak from their heart. So I was kind of like a non-person in many ways, and really more like a sponge for their stories.
One of the dialogues that's grown out of the Matthew Shepard murder is about the effectiveness of hate crimes legislations. There are no hate crimes laws on the books in Wyoming. What are your thoughts about whether hate crime laws make a difference? And would they have made a difference in any of the cases of the men that you interviewed?
I think hate crime laws are useful in sending a strong message to the public that this is not a type of crime to be tolerated. I think anything that discourages this type of crime from happening is useful at this time. These are desperate times, and we need all the help we can get. My feeling, though, my point of view and my work is that I want to get to the roots of the problem. I want to get to the point where even thinking about this type of crime doesn't even exist. That's where I want our society to be at, and that is my purpose behind License to Kill, is to look at the roots of this behavior and seeing if we can do something about it from the very start, as opposed to doing something about it after the fact. In many ways, you know, I don't even want that thought, that anti-gay thought, to exist in people's mind, no less the thought of committing a violent crime against a person just because of his sexual orientation.
After getting to know the men that you interviewed pretty well, are you more or less optimistic about the ability to prevent violence against homosexuals?
I'm less optimistic. I thought I'd be more optimistic, actually, but having done this film and having met these men and having researched other cases that aren't in the film, I can see the widespread contempt for homosexuality out there. I've come face to face with it. I think many of us come face to face with it every day, but we may not acknowledge it or we may not see it because it's not up front. But I saw it up front, and I see it in so many places. Big cities, small cities, rich communities, poor communities, black communities, white communities, Asian communities. It's everywhere. And it's so deep-rooted in our society that I'm very pessimistic. At the same time, I have to add that I'm optimistic because I see many steps being taken. I see a lot of baby steps that I hope will add up to that big boom, that big explosion of equality for gay people as an integral part of our society.
Arthur Dong's documentary, License to Kill, is available for educational use from Deep Focus Productions. This is Fresh Air.